The following sermon is taken from a book called Practical Discourses of Sickness and Recovery by Timothy Rogers. Timothy Rogers is the author of the book called A Discourse on Trouble of Mind and the Disease of Melancholy. Psalm 30 verses 3 and 4. O Lord, thou hast brought up my soul from the grave. Thou hast kept me alive that I should not go down to the pit. Sing unto the Lord, O you saints of his, and give thanks at the remembrance of his holiness. It is pleased that all-wise providence that governs, orders, and directs all things in this lower world, after a very long and terrible sickness and calamity, to give me an opportunity to appear in this place at this time. It is a place where I am well assured there have been many prayers put up for me during my sore and great affliction. And seeing the Most High God, in whose power alone it was to relieve me, has from his own sovereign goodness not cast off your prayers, nor turned away his mercy from me, I am now come to thank him in the midst of this congregation for remembering so mean a creature and so vile a sinner in his low estate, for his mercy endures forever. It's also to thank those of you here that had a sense of my sorrowful condition, for your kind affection, and for the requests which, with so much pity and compassion, you presented to the throne of God in my behalf. I judge it equal that in a place where there has been offered up so many sacrifices of hearty prayer, there should be also offered up one common sacrifice of his hearty praise, and that a great cloud of incense may go up from us towards heaven with an united flame of love and joy. For may you not say with me, who is so great a God as our God, who does marvelous things without number, who commands salvation where there seems to be no sign but of approaching misery and ruin, and who is so good a God as our God that does not contend forever, that creates light in the thickest darkness and turns a shadow of death into the morning. It is this mighty and this gracious God that I would praise myself, and that I would now invite you to praise. It is no less than his all-powerful voice that has assuaged those floods that overwhelm me, after I've been like Jonah in the very belly of hell, swallowed up with amazement and fear. He has made those waves of trouble which in a continual succession rolled over my head to set me now as on the dry land. It was without doubt a surprising thing to Jonah after so sad a case as is mentioned in chapter 2, verses 3 to 6. In which he thus speaks, you had cast me into the deep in the midst of the seas, and the floods compassed me about, and your billows and your waves passed over me. Then I said, I am cast out of your sight. Yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The waters compassed me about, even to the soul. The depths closed me round about. The weeds were wrapped about my head. I went down to the bottom of the mountains. The earth with her bars was about me forever, and so on. I say, after so sad a case as this, it was a surprising thing to the poor man to see himself in this pleasant world again, and to find that the same creature that had swallowed him up should be the vessel that should convey him to the shore. And is it not easy to know after what manner he lived for those 3 days and 3 nights, how he breathed in the sea and in the belly of the well, and with what he was nourished and maintained, so his escape from a danger which had actually overtaken him was no less miraculous. I am not in a less surprised that he may be supposed to be in nothing but that almighty power, to which nothing is impossible, could save either him or me. I think I begin to stand as on the firm land, and behold that stormy sea, and those rough winds that blew so violently and filled me with so great a fear, and which lasted more months than his did nights and days. And though I was no way like to that holy prophet, unless it were in his impatience and anger, yet I can say with him in Jonah 2 verse 9, I will sacrifice to the Lord with a voice of thanksgiving. I will pay that I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. Though I have such a remaining pain as makes me not to know what a total ease is, yet I own it as an effect of his unsearchable grace that I have now so much hope as to be able in some measure to pray to him, and so much ease as to be able to speak to you, neither of which I could have done whilst his heavy hand pressed me very sore. Had it not been for some remaining indispositions, I had not so long delayed to appear in this place. I have thought, indeed, sometimes that I would with Samson arise and do as I did at other times, but that tedious and uncommon pain that afflicted me and the consciousness that I have of mine inability to manage so honorable and so difficult a work as this has long kept me back. Moreover, I thought there was no need of my weaker light nor of my meaner capacity whilst in my absence. You had others, whose understandings, being better furnished, could communicate to you in larger measures from their more abounding store. But the deliverance which God, by his own power and goodness, has already given me is so wonderful, so unexpected, and especially so undeserved, that I cannot but thrust my sickle into the harvest, though it be with a very trembling hand. And I promise myself that you will join your prayers with mine, that it may be for the good of some soul or other. Nay, if God so please, that it may be for the good of many souls that I come here this evening, that it may be for the preservation of others from so thick a darkness and so woeful a condition as that in which I have been. I come to you as one from the dead, to say no more. And though if you hear not Moses and the prophets and the well-attested revelations and discoveries which God has made by them, neither will any other methods be successful to do you good. Yet one would think that the words of one that has dwelt so long as in the very grave and in the nearest confines of eternity ought to carry more than ordinary weight with them. A peculiar attention is usually afforded to dying persons, and I think the same should not be denied to such as in the judgment of others, and in their own opinion have been no longer for this world, as I was for above a year, and upon that account have cause to say, as in the text, O Lord, thou hast brought up my soul from the grave, and so on. From the words we may raise these two observations first. That God alone is the sovereign disposer of life and death. Secondly, to be brought up from the grave is a mercy greatly to be acknowledged, and for which all such as are recovered ought to be very thankful. First, God alone is the sovereign disposer of life and death. This great God concerns himself not only with the nobler parts of his dominions, but with such as are more inconsiderable. He not only preserves the vaster and the purer orbs above, but also this little drossy globe. His care extends itself not only to the highest angel, but to the least and the meanest man. And though men are among us distinguished by several excellencies and titles of honor, yet before him all flesh is as grass. He gives a being to the meanest pile in its ordinary garb, as well as a fine apparel to the beautiful lilies of the field. It is in him that we all live and move and have our being. And if his concourse be removed, all our operations will immediately cease. We cannot act without him, for then we should be self-sufficient and independent on him. He is the author and preserver of our nature. He first tied our bodies and our souls together, and it is his care that maintains this incomprehensible union that is between parts and themselves so vastly different. And when he pleases to suspend his influence, it is dissolved and broken asunder. He is the strength of our life, Psalm 27, verse 1. From him we have all our healthfulness and vigor. He is the great agent, the principal efficient cause of all that exists, and all second causes and their several actions depend upon him. Though the manner of his influx is very mysterious, and it becomes not the weakness of our minds daringly to determine which way it is, we that are extremely in the dark about many of the motions of our own faculties ought not in any way to limit him, whose ways are unsearchable, and who is so far above us. But this we most certainly know, that our whole being and the continuance of it depends on him alone. It is his sun that does refresh our spirits with his temperate and comfortable beams, and that by his amiable sunshine renders this world a place of delight. For were it always covered with darkness, it would be a place very undesirable and full of horror. They are his vapors that are drawn up to fill the bottles of heaven, and it is his hand that opens them again and makes the clouds dissolve to give being to grass and corn, to feed the beasts for us, and to be the staff of our life. 'Tis this day in which we work, and this night in which we sleep. It is his earth that bears us, his air in which we breathe, and they are his winds that pursue and fan that air to make it healthful and serviceable to us. It was this great and gracious God that first breathed into us the breath of life. He formed our several parts with curious and inimitable art, and his own skillful hand brought us from the darkness in which we were enclosed safely to the light of day. It was by his goodness alone that we were not strangled in our birth or smothered in the cradle, and that we did not there by the carelessness of our keepers and by the many distempers that attend our early age end up in a grave. His goodness saved us from the dangers which we ourselves were unable to apprehend, and which without his extraordinary favor would have closed our eyes as soon as we saw the light, and have sent us into the other world when we were but newly entered into this one. His mercy delivered us from the unknown dangers of our heedless infancy and from the unfeared evils of our daring youth. It is God alone that holds our souls in life and suffers not our feet to be moved, Psalm 66:9. It is he that furnishes out of his stores in which to repair the daily decays of nature. He gives us the things that are absolutely necessary to maintain our life, and those also that are necessary for refreshment and delight. His corn, his wine, and his oil, Hosea 2:8. He causes the grass to grow for the cattle and herb for the service of man, that he may bring forth food out of the earth and wine that makes glad the heart of man, and oil to make his face to shine, and bread which strengthens man's heart, Psalm 104:14-15. It is he that spreads our table and who fills our cup and makes the things which we take for the support of life to give us strength, for we live not by bread alone, Matthew 4:4. It is he that gave and that maintains that heat in our stomachs, and the acid juices there that alter and attenuate and distributes the several parts of our meat. It is he that gave us a desire for food, and it drives away those diseases that would lessen and abate our appetite. And it is in the sense of his providence that we ask his blessing before we eat and return him thanks afterwards. For were it not for his gracious influences, our faculties would quickly lose their proper virtues, and we should, notwithstanding all our care, quickly die. All sicknesses are at his disposal, for it is he that kills and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and brings up, 1 Samuel 2:6. When he pleases to withdraw his common blessings, we droop and languish and pine away. Thousands of diseases stand in a readiness waiting for his command, and when our sins make him to give the word, they fall upon us with a mighty violence, and in a few restless days and nights change our countenances, break off our purposes, sustain all our pride and glory. Fools, because of their transgression and because of their iniquities, are afflicted. Their soul abhors all manner of meat, and they draw nigh unto the gates of death. God has fixed the bounds of our habitations and the very time of our stay, and when it shall be that they must know us no more, we are but dust and ashes, and how soon can the mighty power of our great Creator blow away the most strong and healthful, with more ease than we can, our breath scatter a little dust. All things in this lower world have their rise, their progress, and decay by the decree of God. So have the lives of men. There is a time wherein to be born and a time wherein to die, and both known to him, though upon wise reasons hid from our knowledge. God does with great wisdom cast a veil of thick night upon all our future events, that so we may without needless and diverting curiosity perform our present duty. He shows this dominion that he has over the lives of men in these two things. First, in the large difference which his providence makes amongst those persons whose outward circumstances seem to be much alike. One sick man, by the use of some mixtures or applications, immediately recovers, and another that with the most exact observance takes the same medicine, consumes his days in tedious sorrows, and the flood of his own tears is carried mourning to the grave. Secondly, he shows the sovereign disposal of the lives of men in ordering the different seasons and times of their death. One is cut down in his early spring and in the blooming greener youth, and his sun is covered with darkness almost as soon as it begins to rise, whilst another weathers out the storms and grows to a mature and full age. One does but peep, as it were, into the world, takes a short view of it, and is commanded out again, and is at his journey's end in the morning of his life, and another is allowed to travel until the shadows of the evening are stretched out according to their most regular advances, and until the 80, that is the usual date of long life, is expired. One is quickly summoned to the great tribunal and judged, whilst another has a longer space in which to prepare for his trial and his final doom. It is the divine providence that sees and orders not only the larger portions of the lives of men, such as infancy and childhood and youth and manhood, but as God numbers the hairs of our heads, so known to him are all the minutes and hours and days and inparticularities of our life and every moment of our time. He has set us our bounds that we cannot pass, and with respect to his appointment, no man dies before his time. Though a man that dies by an acute disease or a violent death dies before that time which he might have reached in an ordinary course, and before old age, which we reckon to be the most seasonable time in which to die, bloody and deceitful men are said not to live out half their days, that is, according to the general limit and order of providence, as to the age of man, namely 70 or 80 years. And indeed every wicked man in some sense dies before his time, because he is not fit to die, like fruit that is gathered before it is fully ripe. I now proceed to application, and from this doctrine we may infer, first, if God be the sovereign disposer of life and death, then the friends of the sick do them the greatest kindness when they recommend their case to him, and to this they are obliged by the communion which they have with them in the same human nature. They are also in the body, in such a body as is liable to as many pains as they see in others. They may be plunged into the same distresses and need the same favor to be showed to them. Regard, I beseech you, your afflicted friends with great tenderness and pity, for whatsoever their case is, your sins may bring you as low, and you have no assurance that what has happened to them may not be your own lot, before you come to the period of this miserable life. It is also the duty of the sick themselves, in the first assaults of pain, with great humility and contrition of spirit, to betake themselves to God as their only helper, and with a fervor suitable to the sadness of their case, to request of him faith and patience, repentance and mortification, and the pardon of sin, and earnestly to pray that, if it may be, their sickness may not be very long nor very sharp. For long and sore afflictions are so great trials of human nature that they may very well be prayed against, and I suppose no man thinks himself obliged to desire a heavy cross. As to what concerns the sick man himself, he is to put out his affairs into the best order he can upon the first warning, the first beginnings of his illness, for indeed in most distempers those increasing pains that attend them will not allow him to do it afterwards. Thus Job advises in chapter 33, verse 26, that when a man is chastened with pain upon his bed, he shall pray to God, and he will be favorable to him, and he shall see his face with joy. But he that never begins to pray until he be almost at the last gasp will not be able to make such a strong and fervent prayer as is like to reach to heaven. As for them that try the physicians until he gives them over, and never until then seek the prayers of the church, they have but little reason to hope for help from God, to whom they have no recourse until they are driven by the last extremity. For they show that if they could have had relief without him, they didn't care not to behold him for it. In which case it is just with God to suffer the sickness to be mortal, which perhaps had not been so, if applications had been made to him with the first, by calling for the elders, by confessing their sins, by promising repentance, and by prayers for good things requisite, as well for the body as for the soul. It is also the duty of those that are acquainted with the sick, instead of vain and frivolous discourses of common affairs, which have no relish with those that are in great pain, to minister as far as they are able to their spiritual wants, to direct, instruct, and any other way to help them to set their souls in order and to trim their lamps. See what care the holy prophet used to his enemies when they were sick. My clothing was sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting, and prayer returned into my own bosom. I behaved myself as though he had been my friend or brother. I bowed down heavily as one that mourns for his mother. Those means which he used for their recovery were an argument of the sincerity of his own religion, as well as of his most affectionate sympathy and tenderness to them. When you visit the sick, you see in them the prospect of your own mortal estate. You see how soon their complexion, their temper, their sociableness, and all that agreeableness of humor which was pleasing to you is gone and changed. In their broken, feeble expressions, in their wan and pale looks, and in their fallen countenances, you behold that man in his best estate is altogether vanity. Psalm 39, verse 5. And how when God with rebukes corrects man for iniquity, he makes his beauty to consume away like a moth. Then you see that all flesh is grass, and all the goodliness of it is as the flower of the field. Isaiah 40, verse 6. How many times do you see those whom you love struggling with pain, strong and bitter, even as death itself, and you cannot, though you never so earnestly desire it, afford to them the least relief, not a moment's ease, not the smallest interval of rest. But when your hearts have sunk within you with the doleful and unintermitted accents of their groans and sighs, how often have you prayed to God and he has appeared to your help and theirs? There may be many cases in which much speaking may do your afflicted friends no good at all, but there is no case in which your prayers may not be of great advantage, either to preserve them with you, or to obtain for them some gracious discoveries of the love of God, a more easy passage, both which are very great mercies. What wonders have been wrought in all ages by the power of the united intercession of believers, when they have carried their sick ones to Christ? What numbers are there of perfect souls in heaven that can witness to the truth of this? And how many delivered captives are on earth that can now with joy set their seal to it and say with transport, "Truly God is a God that hears prayers." The continued prayers of the church for Peter procured his enlargement, and an angel was dispatched to break his chains and to send him to carry the welcome news to the then praying church that their prayers were heard and he was delivered. Many there are now alive that owe their lives to this, whereof I am one. The mercy of God, which alone could help me, and that was implored and sought by your prayers, has brought me from the very grave. In all future occasions, try this method, for you know it is available and successful. Is any afflicted? Let him pray himself. Is any so overwhelmed that he cannot well perform it? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, and a prayer of faith shall save the sick. James 5, verses 14 and 15. He is to use this course as a means for the recovery of his health. For though we cannot with any modesty pretend to the prayer of faith here mentioned, that is, of a certain persuasion that the person for whom we shall pray shall be raised up, yet we ought to pray in this faith, that it is pleasing to God when we express our dependence upon him by asking those things which we need, that every good thing comes from him, and therefore health and deliverance from death, that though he does not always give that particular thing which we ask, yet it is sometimes denied because we do not ask, and that is, he never gives the greatest blessings of all, which are those of a good mind, but an answer to prayers. Seeing God alone brings to the grave and raises up again, then don't put too much trust or confidence in physicians. A man indeed is under the obligation of self-preservation to have recourse to them, and to keep up his clay cottage as long as he can with all possible repairs. And when one is in very sharp pain and doesn't know which way to turn himself for anguish and trouble, then indeed he does most willingly seek for help and will take anything, though never so displeasing to the taste, if it gives him any hope of being better or more at ease. But upon the first pain or sickness, we must by serious prayer go to God himself and open our case to him who is the most gracious creator and most able to help us. And this we should do before we go to men, who many times when they are most willing to relieve us cannot do it. It is a perpetual reproach upon Esau that is in his disease he sought not to the Lord but to the physicians, 2 Chronicles 16:12. And it is left upon record to warn us from a practice that is unsafe for us as well as dishonorable to God. It is God alone that has put healing qualities into herbs, plants, and the flowers of the field, and who can discover the several virtues that are in them for our good. Do not place too much trust in your physicians. And this advice, I think, is not unnecessary, because there are several people that by manifold disorders and excesses impair and ruin their health, of which they are less careful, from a secret opinion that they have the power of the physic to give them certain relief, and they doubt not but they will be able to rebuild those walls which they have pulled down with their own hands. But this is far from being true, for there are abundance of secret and violent diseases into which they cannot penetrate with all their learned art. And though you go to such as are men of knowledge and fame in their profession, yet there are many things in this little world, man, that are to be the most knowing as a terra incognita, and there may be a thousand diseases for which they lack a name, and much more a cure, and for which there is no receipt in all the dispensaries in the world. Their profession indeed is learned, but like all other human sciences, full of imperfection, and the light which is broke out by the discoveries and inquiries of latter ages, even as to many things in the very frame and contexture of human bodies, which were not known before, shows the darkness and ignorance of former ages, and when this is done its best, the next will likely see more. Beware of leaving your dependence on God to put your trust in men. And though it is commonly said everyone is to be believed in his own art, yet that belief very easily degenerates into presumption. A thousand things may hinder your having any relief from physicians. You may be so pained as not to be able to give them an account of how you are, or what part is affected, or after what manner, or you may, as it frequently happens, have several complicated illnesses, and what they prescribe for one may be very prejudicial to another, or they may do it in haste or by a wrong judgment, which is very easy to fallible men. Take that for your disease, which really is not so, or the apothecary may fail in a mixture of those that attend you in the administration, all which may betray you to death or to long pain. Seek chiefly to the sovereign disposer of all things, who can either cure you without means, or make those that you try to be available, knowing that without him not all the cordials in the world can for one moment stay the departing life, of which many physicians are so sensible that they frequently tell you that by the blessing of God they hope to do you good. Indeed, they had need be men of prayer, that by their means, religio medici, might be as famous in reality as it has been in scorn. And though I pretend to no great skill in these affairs, yet I have some experience as to what I say. I have often found the insufficiency of all things that have been prescribed, and that they have not given to me the least ease in my violent and sharp pain, and how what I have taken with a design to help me has increased my disease and made it more painful. Therefore, having severely smarted myself for my folly and expecting too much from human help, I may be allowed to warn others that they may not fall into the same snare, and to desire them to trust more in God and less in men. We may be as guilty of idolatry in giving men too much of our trust as if we bowed before a graven image, and it is an evil to which men are as prone as to any other sin. An example is that which Suetius saith, that the book which Solomon wrote of medicine was affixed upon the gate into the entry of the temple, and because the people boasted too much in it, neglecting the Lord, Hezekiah caused them to pull away this book and bury it. And a Talmud says that Hezekiah did two memorable things. First, he hid the book of medicine which Solomon had written, and secondly, he broke the brazen serpent which Moses made. 2 Kings 8, verse 8, take a present in your hand and go meet the man of God and inquire of the Lord by him, saying, shall I recover of this disease? They seek for recovery first of all is that which would bring them the most acceptable news, which made the prophet use such ambiguity in his speech, verse 10. For 'tis likely that it was no dissimulation, because the sickness was not in itself mortal, yet he should surely die, that is by the treachery of Haziel. The hope of recovery is so grateful to the patient that physicians are not a little tempted to conceal the danger when it is visible to all but to the sick man. And of what an ill consequence is this? I cannot better express it than in the words of an honorable person for whom men of all the learned professions have a just value. For my party, says, who take the prognostics of physicians to be but guesses, not prophecies, and know how backward they are to bid us fear, till our condition leave them little hope of us. I cannot but think that patient very ill-advised who thinks it not time to entertain thoughts of death, as long as this doctor allows him any hopes of life. For in case they should both be deceived, it would be much easier for the mistaken physician to save his credit than for the unprepared sinner to save his soul. Our safest course in all our troubles and sicknesses is to go to Jesus Christ, who has an omnipotent virtue and an ability to help, as when he was on earth he healed all manner of diseases, and among the rest a person that had suffered many things and many physicians and was nothing bettered for it, but rather grew worse, Mark 5:26. So he has still the same power and compassion.